So it's not about us and what they do for us. It's about how we as a church can equip them and train them as best as we can under God's hand, so that wherever they go or end up, they are the best gift for that church we can offer them. Now, if that means that we don't get all the benefits that we might have done as a local church because we're making that sacrifice, well, the gospel is much bigger than Banstead Community Church. We want to think about how we can bless the wider church.
Welcome to Independence, the FIEC podcast. My name's Phil Topham, Executive Director of the FIEC, and I'm joined today by Dan Green. Hello, Dan.
Hiya, Phil.
Dan, tell us where you're in work and ministry.
Yeah, I'm pastor of Banstead Community Church, which is a small, medium-sized church on the border of Southwest London.
And just tell us a little bit about the context that you're in. What kind of community is it?
It's a community, very middle class, and population is about 20,000. That's made up of three village areas that combine together to make Banstead.
Now, I want to talk to you today particularly about training and training the next generation of church workers. In particular, I think pastors in the context of this conversation. So how can a church like Banstead and any other sort of church leaders listening, how can they raise up the next generation of leaders within the local church? And I think you're really thought through on this. That's why I've invited you to have a conversation about it. And I know you'll be very self-deprecating and say you're not, but you know a lot more about this than I do, brother. But it struck me when I was preparing for this podcast that actually, there's nothing new under the sun, and this has always been something that free churches have been wrestling with. Can I read you something from 1959? So this is a paper that Derek Prime, Johnny Prime's dear father, wrote in 1959, and he was appealing for curacies in nonconformist churches, and he said this: wherever in the world of business or commerce there's a skilled job to be done, some form of apprenticeship is inevitably deemed necessary. Yet almost invariably, when a young man called of God enters the nonconformist ministry, he begins with full charge and responsibility for some local congregation of God's people, which often, through its smallness, may require more wisdom, patience, and experience than the much larger church with the experienced minister. So back in 1959, he was highlighting the same problem. Is that still a problem? How much better have we got at doing this kind of training?
I think over the last 10 years or so, FIEC churches have actually got much better at this. I think the Hub Conference and Trevor and Adrian's role as training director in the past, I think, has elevated the need for training. I guess one of the challenges will be is, as Derek mentions in the paper, large churches may be the ones who are training up those pastors who are going to be taking on small churches, and there is a big difference between being part of a church of 150, 200, 300 or more, and being pastor of a church of 30 to 50, both in terms of resources, in terms of how well you know your congregation, in terms of other elders, there's lots of things that a small church can't do, which a large church can do. So there are differences, and I guess the challenge is how many small churches can actually give a training ground for pastors being a pastor of a smaller church.
So it's interesting. So Derek Prime's paper picks up on that. The immediate reaction of many will be to suggest this kind of arrangement, i.e. a free church curacy or somebody coming in as an assistant to train, is only really for the very large church. But this, on reflection, he says, is not the case, because almost any local church whose minister is actively and fully engaged in pastoral ministry could help a young man and would itself, that is the church, be helped by the arrangement. So how many guys have you trained in Banstead?
I'm currently training up a fifth person.
And how true has it been for you that it's helped both the guys you've trained up and the church in Banstead?
Speaking first for the church, I think it's been wonderful for the church to have five different men who have been part of the church, and we've got to meet them, their families, and having them in the congregation has been an absolute joy. It's come with a cost, because we have to say goodbye to them every 2 years.
So that's interesting. So you hand them on. They're not serving in Banstead.
Oh no, we kept one of them because we realised actually he had very good evangelistic gifts, and we wanted to keep him on as an evangelist, so he's still with us. But the other four, other three, have gone after 2 years, and the current one will be leaving in a year's time. And that's been very much the aim of this programme we've been doing. I say to the church, really, when they start the day one, we are looking forward to 2 years' time and actually saying goodbye to them, because that means we've done our job for that short period of time in their lives.
So this is about serving the wider church, not just Banstead. How important is that mindset, do you think, Dan?
I think that's the starting point when we're thinking about training. So interestingly, when you go to the scriptures, one of the classic passages we might go to when we think about training is Jesus' prayer in Matthew 9:38, ask the Lord of the harvest to send out workers into the harvest field. But just go back a few verses to see the context of that prayer. Mm. And it's the Lord Jesus going around the villages and seeing people who are harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. And we've got to remember that in our nation, well, there are Christians who are in desperate need of pastors and elders who can shepherd them, who can feed them, who can protect them. But also there's loads of places where there isn't a gospel witness or an insufficient gospel witness. And we need to raise up men and women who will go to those places, who will reach out with the good news of the Lord Jesus and hopefully see a church planted in those communities. But the need is great. And so it is vital that we do this.
Isn't though this the job of, this is provocative, training institutions and, you know, theological colleges, don't they do the role of training the pastor, ensuring that he's ready to go out and serve in a local church context?
Bible colleges, training courses have an important part to play in training up the next generation. But when I open my Bible and I look at a New Testament, does it say anything about raise up workers by sending them off to a seminary, to a Bible college? No, it's very much a responsibility of the church. And Paul's instructions to Timothy to find reliable men, reliable people who he can ensure that the gospel is entrusted to be passed on going forward. It means the church has got to take responsibility, not only in training up leaders for the church, but actually every member for serving, for speaking a truth for one another.
So what are some of the challenges then you've perhaps experienced at Banstead or you've seen elsewhere? What are some of the barriers to training? I'm going to say a man here, our complementarian context, yeah. A pastor, somebody who will go out and pastor another church. We know there are lots of training opportunities for men and women, but in particularly mentoring, training a pastor, what are some of the challenges the church has faced there?
I think one for pastors, they're busy. Mm. If you're a large church pastor, you're a small church pastor, you're really busy. And that is always going to be the case. And the reason why I've been able to be involved in this work at Banstead is that the church has generously seen the importance of it and has set me aside about 5 hours a week of my time just to put towards training up.
Let's just pause on that for a second. So you're giving of your time. So this is not somebody learning by osmosis. This is you actively engaged in their training. So what does that kind of 5 hours look like, Dan? How do you do that?
So I guess an hour of the time is thinking out about the material that I want the training pastor to be engaging with, whether that be MP3s to listen to, videos to watch, books to read. Currently, we're doing all the training in-house. So a lot of the stuff that we would do at seminary, and you might do at seminary, we're doing in-house using resources that are available. So some of that time will be sourcing it. But I guess the biggest part of that time is I meet with a trainee pastor for 3 to 4 hours every week, and we're sitting down and he's bringing the stuff that he's been reading on, could be doctrine, on biblical studies, on pastoral theology, to do with preaching, all the elements to do with pastoral ministry. And we're really talking about what he's learning and then thinking about how it applies in the context of the local church. So he might ask me about some doctrine that he's read, or like some obscure argument. He goes, has that been an issue in Banstead? I go, nah. I go, it might be in some area, but not here. And really what we're trying to do is everything he's learning is trying to apply it into the local church in Banstead, which I pastor of, but also get him thinking about different contexts that he might find himself in the future and how it might apply there.
So a lot of training colleges would give men and women training for ministry placements in churches. How is what you're doing different to that?
I guess he's much more intense. So he's with us the whole time. He gets to accompany me on membership interviews. He sits in on elders meetings. He's involved in, like when someone comes forward to a baptism, he'll be brought along to that. He learns to do pastoral visitation. There's lots of things that you can't do within a Bible college or another training institution. They're brilliant at providing.
Yeah, we're not decrying them, are we? They're doing a great work. But
there's just some things that you can only do in a local church. Even things like preaching opportunities. And if you're on a placement church, you may have a limited number of opportunities to preach in the course of of a year. Generally, in the 2 years they're with us, they'll preach somewhere between 35 and 40 times. And to get 35, 40 sermons under your belt before you're going into position, it can be just really helpful.
You've got to set the church up, though, to allow that, haven't you? So if a church is only meeting once on a Sunday, yeah, that's going to limit the opportunity. So what's your structure and how do you enable that to happen?
Well, we have the advantage of having two services. So almost every other month, the evening service will be completely set aside for them to get experience in preaching. And that's been the case with a lot of the trainees in the past. So as a church congregation is very used to trainee pastors preaching. In fact, they love the trainee pastor and preaching as well, and especially seeing them grow and develop over the course of the 2 years as well.
And I guess they can make mistakes with you as well, can't they? One of the things Derek Prime says in his paper is, you know, they will be indulgent. This is the church. They'll be indulgent at his mistakes. And when he errs badly, be willing to smile and say, he's only a beginner after all. Have you found that in Bansett? Is that helpful?
I think it is in a sense. Although saying that, a lot of our training pastors have been actually very good
and not made any mistakes.
Well, I wouldn't go that far, but actually they are, and they, because they know it's, because the church knows it's training, they're looking for the 2 years rather than the immediacy. And if they've seen progress over the 2 years, well, it's a wonderful blessing. And the church at Banstead has been really kind in feedback. A lot of the training pastors have commented on just how helpful and the feedback from folk in the church are.
What are some of the costs involved? There's a financial one, obviously, but what other costs are there for you and the church in training a man in ministry?
Well, as I said earlier, it's 5 hours of my time that could be used in other areas. There is obviously a financial cost, particularly if the way we've done it in Banstead is we take them on as a full-time worker, providing housing, providing a salary, covering the training costs, making sure that for the 2 years they're with us, they don't have to be worrying about where they're going to find the money for the training. It's very much all catered for. Another, I think one of the big costs is emotionally. And certainly for me, I get to spend a lot of time with the training pastor over the 2 years. And then at the end of it, I have to say goodbye to them. And there's a sadness involved in that, but also for the church. I notice that with every trainee pastor they're saying goodbye to, there is a very much a sadness that comes with it. Whilst they are thrilled to see him placed in ministry, to hear about how the gospel is going out and the local churches are being blessed by their service, and there is still the sadness of getting to know someone for 2 years, building up friendships, loving them, and then having to say goodbye.
At the beginning, Dan, you touched on something which is interesting, that how often you can train in a larger church, but actually the church you first pastor will be a much smaller church. How do you deal with that situation with the guys you're training?
I guess one thing is we're blessed with the resources to be able to do that and keep on doing that. So we realise that as at Banstead, we're very privileged in that we're on to five. We're probably able to take on a sixth trainee pastor in a year's time. So we realise that a lot of other smaller churches may not have the resources to be able to do that, which is quite hard. And the church has obviously set aside the time for me to do that. I think there is something about being a smaller church that we can provide opportunities that can't be replicated as easily in larger churches. Or they could be, but it may not be right there on obviously. I was talking to a previous trainee pastor a few weeks ago, and he just said to me, one of the real benefits I had from training at Banstead was it forced me to do ministry amongst the seniors in the church. Mm. And how that, having spent all my time with students or young people, to be able to actually sit down with those who are in their 80s, 90s, sometimes centurions, and learn how to minister to them, to do services in care homes, which often the smaller churches have a larger elderly population. So there is something about that, being able to be able to offer that. But also, you generally have to get stuck in a lot more in a smaller church as well. And not in the case of we just need someone to help with the work, but if we think about it as we're trying to give you a broad experience, because when you go into whatever your next role is, you might be doing youth work, you might be doing seniors work, you may be doing a lot of pastoral visiting, you may be doing lots of preaching, trying to give a whole broad general look at ministry so that they're equipped for whatever away, come their way.
You touched on something there when you said, you know, there'll be, you know, it's not just about sharing the workload. I wonder if sometimes we can think about having a trainee or somebody as an assistant, basically to come and help the pastor to do all the things that need doing in the church. And that's a good thing, but I guess you'd say that's not training. Is that fair?
I think so. Whilst I think getting a worker in can be a great testing ground, for maybe further training, it may be a way of seeing whether their servant-heartedness, what their character is like, even just giving them experience of this is what being a pastor involves. That, I think, has a real benefit in doing that. But actually, I think I want to take a step back when we're thinking about training someone and actually think of it in terms of we want this person to be a gift to a future church. So it's not about us and what they do for us. It's about how we as a church can equip them and train them as best as we can under God's hand so that wherever they go or end up, they are the best gift for that church we can offer them. Now, if that means that we don't get all the benefits that we might have done as a local church because we're making that sacrifice, well, the gospel is much bigger than Banstead Community Church. We want to think about how we can bless the wider church.
Can we talk about character and gifting for a minute? So there's been a lot written, said about that in the last couple of years, that often in conservative evangelical circles especially, we've elevated gifting over character. How do you try and iron that out wisely and well in the local church context, both with the guys you take on and then the way that you're training them?
One of the advantages of them being in the local church all the time is that I get to watch how they interact with all kinds of people. So you start to see what their personalities, what they're natural and where they're naturally drawn to, how they deal with different groups of people. I also get feedback from folk in the congregation as well. So they may come up to me and go, I found this with this person. And what are you going to do about it? So some of the time. And again, I'm trying to teach them in patience. I think the fact that I'm meeting with them one-to-one or sometimes other elders may get involved in the meetings which I have with them each week, it gives that extended time together as we're discussing theological issues or pastoral issues. You start to see how they are dealing with those matters in themselves. It's interesting when you're throwing a question back, how would you deal with that situation, and seeing how they're doing things differently. You learn quite a lot about their heart, about their personality and their character in that way. And it's then they provide sort of more natural teachable moments. Obviously, I try and take them with me when I can to different meetings, when I've got different ministry tasks to do, which obviously gives the opportunity to try and model them, but also receive feedback from them. They will ask questions, why did you do it that way? And hopefully through my example and also teaching them and discussing with them, that's going to be shaping them for the future.
Do you pick up things with them about kind of character as part of the 2 years that they're with you? Will you have those kind of honest conversations?
Yeah, in fact, one of the encouraging things about our present trainee is he's really forward in actually asking for those character discussions. Like, he wants to share, he wants to ask very personal questions. And I try to say to him, look, nothing's off the table. Mm. Do ask those hard questions of me so I can share my heart. And I cannot, and I'm willing to say, look, actually, I'm pretty rubbish in that area. Mm. And that honesty does help.
That's iron sharpening iron, isn't it? Essentially.
Indeed.
Yeah. Yeah. Excellent. And I wonder, Dan, are there things that you hand over to the trainee, things that he will just take on, which are they things you always give to any trainee, or are they different depending on the trainee you have? Are there ministries that essentially become his remit?
We're quite careful in terms of how we do this. One of the things we're aware of being a small church is if we start anything up in 2 years' time, if they're gone and there isn't a trainee, what's going to happen to that ministry? We don't want to start something and then say in 2 years' time, actually, sorry, we can't do it anymore. So we, rather than actually giving them something that they're fully responsible for, we will tend to involve them in other ministries, but encourage the person who is running the ministry or involved in leading it to use them as much as they can. And really, we're trying to get them exposed in all areas of church life. So they have plenty of opportunity to serve in all kinds of areas. I'm aware that there are some areas that we just can't give them the experience. And weddings are one thing, leading a wedding. And reality is at Banstead, we do, just because of a demographic, we don't have a huge number of weddings out and that need to take place. And generally, they'll want to, one of the pastors or elders to do that. Same with funerals. And those are ones which are harder to give experience. And we're quite open and upfront about that. But we will say, look, follow the process of how we go about doing it.
And you involve him in elders' deacons' meetings?
Yeah, so they're involved in elders' meetings.
And are they an elder at the church?
No. Just the way our constitution has works is that to be an elder, you're automatically a trustee, which is a voted on position. And one of the things we did at Banstead when we formed the trainee pastor program is we got the church to vote on the program. That gave the freedom to the elders to appoint different individuals to the role. So we didn't have to constantly every 2 years have a vote. And especially when it's harder to vote on a trainee because they're not the finished article. And as elders, we're looking for potential. We're asking, particularly if they're coming from a different church, do they meet the character qualifications of an elder? Like, I think that's one of the very important questions that we ask, right? And when getting references, even if they're not an elder at a previous church, do they meet the qualifications for it?
And is the church happy that the trainee is in elders and deacons meetings? Was that a hurdle? Has that been difficult?
No, I think they realise that there's probably been a reality is lots of people become pastors of a local church and may never have sat in on an elders meeting, but it's a key part of training. Of course, as elders, we can choose that if there is a particularly sensitive matter, we can ask them to step out of a room for when we discuss that or do that at an alternative time. But a lot of our elders meetings are sort of ordinary ministry, doesn't have the sort of highs and or lows and or crises. So they're actually experiencing probably a lot of what normal church life is in a lot of places.
Mm. So let's go to the end of the process. So Lord willing, you train a man for 2 years. He has been theologically trained. He is now experienced in the life of certainly of Banstead. He is ready, quote unquote, for a first pastorate. How do you move him into that role? Is he just apply for jobs? What's that process look like at the end of the 2 year period?
It's probably been different each trainee pastor. Sometimes they've looked at found jobs and have gone through the process that way. Others, a church has approached and said, are you keeping the trainee? Could we explore with them what the role is? Also, it's worth saying that each trainee has almost ended up in a different route after finishing with us. So one became an assistant pastor because he needed a bit more experience in church life. He's now a pastor today. Another stayed with us as an evangelist. Another went to be an associate pastor at a larger church. Another actually went straight to be a pastor of a church. So we haven't got a defined, they have to become a pastor. We see our role in training is trying to move them one step along on the process. So where they start and where they finish, it may be that we only take them part of a journey and they need to continue that training somewhere else. But we just want to make sure that when they leave us, we've at least helped them move a bit further on.
So we've talked about what it looks like for you to have trainees at Banstead. Let's move the question slightly. What advice would you give to church leaders listening who are thinking about potentially training up workers for other churches? Perhaps they've been prompted by this podcast or other things they've been reading. What advice would you give to guys who want to do something similar to what you've done?
I think one thing to say is you've got to get the church on board. It's not just you training the person up. It's the whole church. You commented earlier, the whole church is going to be listening to them preach. And as a result of that, they've got to have a buy-in. They've got to accept that it may not be you in the pulpit as much as you have been. I think you've got to be willing to let go of some stuff. So if you're used to doing the bulk of the preaching, to actually say, I'm purposely going to do less in order to give more experience for them, that you've got to do that. I think you've also got to see they're not your competition. There is a danger that you get a trainee on and the church likes them better, or they just are more gifted than you. And you've got to say, that's okay.
Mm.
And in fact, if they are better than you at the end of it, well, wonderful. It means that the church is getting a much better gift than it would be if you were the one who was as leaving. So I don't think we need to be worried or anxious about our own position as a result of it. Let's think wider and say, this is for the good of the church. I think we want to be clear about what support we can give to them. Like, I don't think we want to...
It's going to put a burden on you, isn't it?
Yeah, so you've got to be realistic about that. I think the church needs to financially buy into it as well. Training isn't cheap, and whatever route you go down, and particularly if you're in an affluent part of the world where costs are incredibly high, the church has got to be willing to do so, because I think the worst thing is if someone's training for ministry and doing everything they can to equip themselves for a future in ministry, but I've also got the distraction of how are we going to live from day to day. That's not helpful. Yeah. So we want to try and do what we best can do to support them and give them the support they need. And that might be being honest about what support you can offer.
In terms of the way churches can think about getting into this, are there any pitfalls, things that any churches who shouldn't do there could be some general big picture things that are going on in a church. Are there any reasons why you should say no or not at this point? And what pitfalls can churches avoid?
I think one, if a church isn't all together on this matter, is you don't want to create extra tension in the church over training up an individual. And training is a wonderful thing. It's benefiting the whole church. You don't want it to become something that could cause great division in it. I think rushing to get the wrong person in, and that's a pitfall. Like, think, oh, we want to train, let's just get
whoever
in. Mm. Actually, you want to make sure that they are biblically qualified for the role, and you want to make sure that they've got the character and gifting, and not be so desperate because you need help doing the work.
Yeah,
I think that's a pitfall as well. And I wonder if there's others as well, but.
Those are some of the key ones. And just finally, Dan, as we come to an end, what's the first step? So how do you advertise? So you say you've got the church on board, you're moving things ahead, you think this is the right decision for you as a church. How do you kind of advertise? How do you go about finding the right person who you can bring in to train?
I think some of it's going to be asking around. Like, there may be larger churches that have plenty of people who actually could go forward to ministry. But the problem they've got is they've got too many for the size of the church. They can only have so many people they train. Can you serve them by taking someone who wants to train for ministry off their hands? So I think it's asking around, maybe getting in touch with FISC. Do they know of people looking to train in ministry? The Hub Conference is happening each year, and there'll be some going along to the Hub Conference who may be at a stage of what's next. And some of the Bible colleges may have people who are looking to find a next role, asking around in that respect. So it could be advertising. There's lots of avenues to pursue, and it's more of a case of pursue as many of them as you can, and hopefully you'll get the right person for the church.
Dan, would you take on someone who's been through Bible college and then come to you? Because you talk about doing a lot of the theological training yourself. Is that a route you would look at? So you would look at graduates from colleges as well?
Yeah, I'd be happy to do that. This current one, we're doing almost some of the stuff you might do at Bible college in-house. But the one before that had done Oak Hill. Mm. He had graduated from Oak Hill. But what he needed was just the experience of an independent church curacy.
Absolutely.
And so the training I did with him was much more focused around preaching, pastoring, ecclesiology and church life. So I think it's having flexibility to change how you train in order to serve the person as best as you can. I wonder if we just think seminary is the option or Bible college is the option to train someone out of excitement and that they've come forward. Let's just throw them into any course. And maybe sometimes it's just taking a step back and asking a question. Here's where they are. Where do they need to develop? Where are their strengths? Where are their weaknesses? What can we do to help with the areas they need to grow in? And it might be, well, we do that course or Bible college course is the best thing for them. But it might be something else. It's actually thinking about what is best for the individual to help them be a gospel worker, whether that be a pastor or other worker, for the long haul. What can we do to best equip them to serve in this way?
Well, the Hub Conference is happening again, January 2023. Right. So hopefully see you there. You're always at the Hub Conference, Dan. It's good to see you there. Just as a final kind of thought, are there any things you're burning to say about in-church training that we've not said that you're really keen to get across?
I think one thing I'd say just about training in general is I think it'd be really great if we just think about how we can train the whole church. And we think of this theological teaching as being something for those who are going to end up as pastors
or academics
or full-time workers. I wonder if there's a place to think about how we can get some of the teaching into church life, such maybe a Bible college for the whole church. It may not be pitched to the same level as you, if you're doing a degree in it. But I think it's lots of these foundational doctrinal truths and practical aspects of the Christian life, which we may not cover in a Sunday sermon, but are so crucial for us and being rooted in the faith and being able to follow Christ faithfully in an ever complex and challenging world.
And that's the Titus 2 model, isn't it? Training all of the church to train others within the church. Dan, thank you so much for joining us on Independence today. It's been great to chat to you about training. Lots more we could say, but hopefully this is a helpful discussion for pastors and churches who might think about training a man for church ministry. Dan, thank you for joining us today. This has been Independence, the FIEC podcast. Do rate and leave a review so others can find it. And we'll talk to you again soon. Thanks, Dan.
Thanks, Phil.